Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better
and better.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore on assignment at the College World Series. Busy one. We'll get caught up. You know, all the rock stations do two for Tuesday. They do. So we're going to fire up a double shot of Mike Babcock. Mike Babcock of Hail Varsity Babbers coming up in 15 minutes. Spend some time with him on the Athlon 50. His thoughts on the Magnificent Eight. A tremendous story by Mike in the Hail Varsity yearbook that I am flipping through and holding in my hand right now. On newsstands, the yearbook, your college football Bible, Nebraska fans, right here, Mick Stoltenberg on the cover. That is very nice. And go get one, is what I'm telling you.
Yeah, I can't wait to check this out. It is thick.
It's fantastic.
Got a lot of stuff in here.
And the pictures are pretty.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
Rick Pizzo in 1 hour, Big Ten Buffet, Mitch Sherman from the College World Series next hour. As we'll get caught up with Mitch, we'll talk some college football with him. You can join us today on Hail Varsity, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Also on the ESPN 1480 app. Tap the line, Schilling Bridge, Cork and Tap House. And we invite you to call in, share your thoughts, 800-825-5865, 466-3776. Share your thoughts about what? Well, how about Bob Elliott? The news coming down about 10 minutes ago from the University of Nebraska. Coach Bob Elliott to move to a defensive analyst position. And Coach Booker, now the assistant coach at the safety spot. This announcement from Mike Riley came out, 40 minutes ago? 45 minutes ago,
yep,
before
30,
we
40.
Were on.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have here is Bob Elliott leaving, and Coach Riley quoted in this release, "We are sorry to see Bob Elliott leave our full-time on-field staff. Bob is a wonderful man, a great football coach, has built a great rapport with our staff and the players in our program. We respect Bob's decision, and we are confident that he will continue to have a positive impact on our program." 38 years, Bob Elliott. And we talked to Coach McBride. We've talked to Jim Walton. We have talked to folks that have worked with, worked for, coached with, coached for Elliott and the Elliott group. And this is a tough day, a sad day for Nebraska. Now let's talk impact for 2017, because as a Nebraska fan, you're also about results. But you are also, first and foremost, thoughts, prayers, and best wishes, no matter what the issue is, for Coach Bob Elliott. And a couple of times to talk with him, very gracious, very intellectual, just a great dude, and a great dude you want to play for if you're a player, is what I suspect. So that's the transition. From an analyst standpoint, listen, you're not going to get many better coaches, and you're going to get far fewer better analysts than Bob Elliott. And that's what he had been doing under Coach Kelly at Notre Dame, okay? That's what he had been doing because of health issues. He'd been unable to be on the field. I don't know at this time the reason. But historically speaking, when he has been off the field from coaching, it's been because of health issues. So you pray that it's not ultra, ultra serious.
Mm-hmm.
But it may be enough to keep him off the field. So Nebraska has just a stalwart now as an analyst. And let's talk about Coach Booker, Scott Booker. And Nebraska, you know, look, they brought him on, and he was in the analyst role and the special team side of things. And I don't want to say contingency, but Nebraska had another set of eyes and another able body on staff ready to go. And it's a Elliott, Diaco, Booker, Notre Dame type comfort level. This is what the defense is going to be. You're working for Bob Diaco right now. His first hire as the man defensively is go get himself a guy that's comfortable with his system and can be another teacher to it. That was Bob Elliott. Well, Scott Booker knows it because the guy was at Notre Dame for quite a while. And he has 14 years experience at the subdivision level and at Notre Dame from 2010 to 2016. Now, when he was there, he was the tight ends dude, and there's some good guys at Notre Dame during that era to play. But from a special team standpoint, he was fine there. So what's Nebraska have right now? Basically, you have Diaco running the entire defense as coordinator and watching spring practice. He was in major communication with the safeties himself, okay? So that Elliott wasn't doing anything, but Diaco and Elliott are kind of one in the same. Booker's going to come in here and has the same vision and same principles and same terminology and technique. You're not going to have to reteach Booker. He's been kind of up to speed and in step with Diaco. So that's now, look, when you have a coaching change at this time of year, which you never have, unless you retire like Bob Stoops, you need to make sure everyone's okay, because right now they are practicing and prepping for what you've installed this spring. They're rehearsing it and rehearsing it and continuing to rehearse it so they get it down, and it's not, well, it's constantly think about what we have to do to get to A, B, and C with this defensive setup and responsibility chart. So right now, you just hope that this doesn't put a kink into Nebraska. I'm talking from a transition that's going to be tough anyway from a 4-3 to a 3-4.
Yeah, Elliott would have helped with that.
Yeah.
With all of his experience and expertise and working and with Diaco before.
But he's still going to. But it's just not him on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And as good as Booker is, you got to ask a guy who's got 14 years of coaching experience is awesome. That's nice to have, and that's a good option for Nebraska, but it ain't 38 with Elliott. I subscribe to the theory you get better with age from a teaching and communicating standpoint. The older you get, the smarter you are. That's my point.
True. But so, it also seems like maybe we were talking last week, it might be trending towards a young man's game a little bit for coaching in college football and having Booker's energy. And not saying he's not inexperienced at all. I mean, he's got plenty of experience,
it sounds like.
But obviously not as much as Bob Elliott. But
sure.
I don't think – here's what Bob Elliott had to say about Booker. Quote, great guy, great person, great father and family man. Very, very good with the X's and O's of special teams. And he's good with drill work, and he understands how it goes from fundamentals to drill work, then to team. He knows how the progression goes. I mean, he's really good. We're lucky to have him. And he said this past spring when Booker was hired.
Okay. And the X's and O's side of things and special teams is evident. That's what he was brought on to do.
Mm-hmm.
Safeties, though, is different.
That's true.
And again, that's more on Diaco's plate to coach the defense, get its principles out, and then get to the safeties. So there's your update. Nebraska will have a new safeties coach, and Bob Elliott off to a defensive analyst position. Scott Booker will be the assistant coach, as he's been on staff for a little while here at Nebraska now. Kind of roam in the secondary with Diaco, and Elliott will be right there. Any questions, any problems, any concerns, go to Bob or go to Bob. It's kind of like What's the movie I'm thinking of here? Ah!
Bob and Bob.
Bob and Bob. The two, we're coming in here to fire you. Hmm. What exactly do you do? Office Space.
Oh, okay.
It's Bob and Bob. Your name's Michael Bolton? Yeah, but I hate his music.
Yeah, that's right.
I think those two guys were Bob and Bob. So there you go. There's your update, and I'm sure there'll be some thoughts here as we get closer to Big Ten Media Days and Nebraska starts camp. But best to Bob Elliott in his new role and in his decision to step away from on-field coaching. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Numbers can join us here on Hail Varsity Radio. A Hot Reads topic we'll get into. Mike Babcock coming up. Rick Pizzo on the way. And Mitch Sherman next hour as well. Okay, good question by Vogues. Let's chew on it a little bit. We'll get into some mailbag stuff too. Is this going to be a hot seat-free year for the Big Ten? And you know what? You'd like to say yes, but I don't know. I think it's too soon, and let's just talk about the two perceived worst teams. That's Rutgers and Illinois. Okay. I don't know that Rutgers is in any position. They're not that far removed from 8-5. Okay, they went to a bowl game and they went 8-5 back in 2014 when they had Leonte Carew.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah, Nebraska smoked him. Teal was their quarterback, and I think they broke his face. But Rutgers isn't that far away from being 6, 7, 8 wins. And they got an Ohio State guy in Ash that I think can probably recruit really well. In fact, he probably did really well recruiting the Eastern Seaboard talent to Ohio State. That and the Penn State coach that's now on staff at Ohio State, Larry Johnson Sr. Illinois, though, Lovey, man, he's 3-9, and they brought him in, and I thought there was some okay momentum with Cubitt, the interim. And they had some players. They beat Nebraska. There's a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And while Lovey's a name, and Lovey's work in the NFL is extremely respected, and he went to a Super Bowl and yada yada yada, and he was doing okay with Tampa too. I think he may want to be put out of his misery in Illinois because he's 3-9. He's having a tap dance for freaking recruits. You're always a class or two away at Illinois from getting back because the Zucker struggled at recruiting winners. Consistently, the Zucker was great at recruiting some NFL guys, and you're kind of up and down, and you'd have a great season, but you wouldn't follow. You couldn't reload. You've never really been able to do it at Illinois. Just haven't. So Zucker recruited well, but just struggled from a consistency standpoint. Mm-hmm. And they popped him, and that was a mistake because he'd still be going strong there. I think Illinois could make a move after this year if they're god awful. 3-9, 2-10, one win. They have too much talent for that. But it's a matter of his patience level.
Yeah.
It's a matter of his personality. And I think Lovey's quiet and reserved and very thoughtful and very intelligent. But from a communication and a get you fired up standpoint, that ain't him. Because you have guys on staff that'll do that. Illinois is the one I'm looking at because he may want to get back to the NFL or he may just count his millions and retire because he's pushing 60. Let's talk with me here about Michigan State. If they have another 3-9,
they'd be my second choice.
They're not going to pop D'Antonio. They're not.
They have another 3-9.
Hell no, they're not.
And they have another off-field issues again.
But this is really, and I'm not. Again, let me preface this by saying one report of the magnitude and substance of Michigan State's issues is too many. This is the first time they've been in trouble, to my recollection, on this scale of this heinousness. Okay? So he is disgusted by it. And, yeah, Michigan State kind of got out of their lane with who they were recruiting. They were jumping up in the recruiting rankings. They've always been better at going under-the-radar blue-collar guys like Le'Veon Bell, who was only recruited by a MAC school in Michigan State. Connor Cook. Who else? Go down the list. The Bulla kids, okay? They've done well mm-hmm. because of that chip on their shoulder. So if they have another 3-9, they won't fire him. They can't. He's making like $4 million, $4.5 million. They can't. Michigan State's just not flush with enough cash, I don't believe. And we'll talk to Pizzo about this in an hour. They can't pull the trigger. And listen, let's not throw out 10 years of greatness since the 60s for Sparty. Nebraska, would there be a move made if things really, really, really go bad? We're talking 2-10? Probably, because this place will burn down. But it may burn down if you go 6-6.
Yeah, I think it's just a good overall point, though, that there maybe won't be a change. And Brandon just kind of noticed that and did a good article on it.
Yeah, fantastic. HailVarsity.com, hot seat, free Big Ten. We'll get Pizzo's thoughts in the Big Ten buffet. Mike Babcock coming up shortly. Get his thoughts on the Magnificent Eight and the Hail Varsity yearbook, as well as many Husker topics. The Top 50 with Athlon Babbers is next.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Thanks for spending your time back with you. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Jay Moore on assignment at the College World Series. I'm saying that with a straight face at the Baseball Village. As long as he's not throwing those curveballs at anyone's head. I don't think he's pitching, but if you're up at the CWS, go stop by and say hey to Jay Moore. Take a listen to Mike Babcock, historian, author, Hall of Famer, back with us on Hail Varsity. Babbers, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Smitty.
Well, yeah, you are. I just got done reading the Magnificent Eight in the Hail Varsity yearbook, Mick Stoltenberg on the cover. We have some issues that are at the station here. And newsstands, subscribers, the world will see the Hail Varsity yearbook today and in short turnaround time. Mike, I want to start with your story on the Magnificent Eight. And you were able to get in contact with some of the folks on that 1964 team. 44 players of the 44, 8 African-American. And they paved the way for diversity today. And, Mike, I wanted to ask you about your interactions with some of the players on this team, the Magnificent Eight members, and just kind of the sense and feedback you got from them about their experience.
Well, you know, Smitty, it started way back during last season, and maybe towards the beginning of last season when I was going to do a Legends of the Fall on Preston Love Jr. Mm-hmm. And I got to talking to Preston, and gosh, I must have talked to him over the course of about two or three interviews or conversations, I guess. I don't know how you would describe it. And all of a sudden, what was going to be a Legends of the Fall on Preston became the Magnificent Eight story, which he had mentioned. And, you know, initially I'd talked to Preston about Henry Woods, who was the first African-American quarterback in Nebraska. Actually, Henry was only at Nebraska for a couple of seasons, and he came from Texas. And that's how I first started talking to Preston. But anyway, Preston had mentioned that Willie Fishall and Jim Brown were living in Omaha, and they got together on a regular basis and you know, had lunch and kind of talked about old times. And the picture that's in the along with the story of the three of them, Preston, Jim Brown, and Willie Fishall, Paul Behringer, Bellinger took last year a year ago in the summer. He went up to Omaha and took some pictures with those guys. So, I mean, it's, to me, I look back on it now, it's kind of ironic the way it started, and what it turned into and what I wish it could have been, which is my initial goal was, well, why don't I try to get in touch with the seven remaining, the one is deceased, Langston Coleman, with whom I had talked a couple times over the years, and go that way. But as it turns out, with the three that I was able to talk to in the Omaha area, there are things, there's a lot that I wasn't even able to get into this story, and I think the story ran a little over 3,000 words. But it was a great experience for me talking to these three about their experiences and what the racial attitude was like in the mid-60s at Nebraska, because that's kind of I sort of grew up watching Husker football and being a big fan, and so I knew those names. I saw Preston Love play in the state basketball tournament at Omaha Tech way back in the day, so I was familiar with his name and what an outstanding athlete he was before he ever even got to Nebraska.
Very nice job in that story, Mike. I want to switch something to me and Schmidt got to yesterday with the Athlon Top 50 College Football Players of All Time. What did you think of the list overall? What did you think of the four Huskers that they selected?
Well, I thought that was good. I probably sound provincial on this thing, but I thought that the first offensive lineman that should have been on that list, and we didn't get the offensive lineman until late in the 16, I think Orlando Pace was the first offensive lineman. Dave Remington was 19. I thought Remington should have been the first offensive lineman on the list. I think he was the kind of the definitive offensive lineman. If you look at it, he won two Allen trophies. I don't think anybody else has done that. He won the Lombardi Award. He was a two-time All-American, two-time Academic All-American. I mean, one of the most remarkable things about Dave, I thought, was in 1981, his junior year, he was the Big 8 Offensive Player of the Year. The Big 8 Offensive Player of the Year as a center at Nebraska as a junior. Now, he didn't win it in 82 because the Big 8 Offensive Player of the Year was Mike Rozier, IBAC. But of all the awards he won, I've always thought that's one of the most remarkable awards, to be the Offensive Player of the Year of the Big 8 Conference, and you're a center.
That's phenomenal. You bring it up to Dave, and he just kind of shrugs it off. But they were really, really good in 81, by the way. Nebraska was. I think they played for the national championship, didn't they?
Well, that was kind of an after-the-fact type deal.
Sure, with the rankings and
They got into the bowl game against Clemson, and it, as it turns out, the way things fell, I think Nebraska was fourth ranked going into that game, but didn't have Turner Gill. He was sidelined by that point. Remington's senior year, of course, was the controversial Penn State thing, which that could have been. The irony of it was, irony is not the word, but 81, 82, and 83, Nebraska was in a position where it could have won national titles in each of those 3 years. And certainly in 82, Nebraska would have played for the national championship had that Penn State thing gone differently. At State College, and then, as you said, in 81, Nebraska, as it turned out, what happened on New Year's Day in the bowl games, Nebraska could have been national champion. That's when Clemson won its first national championship by beating Nebraska.
They had Tommy Frazier as the number 12, the highest-ranking Husker on here. Is he the quintessential answer for best Husker of all time, or would you give that to somebody else?
Boy, if I were looking at the quintessential Husker, and this is probably an old guy, partly, but to me, probably Johnny Rogers would be the guy that comes to mind for me as a quintessential Husker because he was the first Heisman Trophy winner. He was a Nebraska guy. He was from Omaha Tech High School, same as Preston Love Jr. And, you know, I think that Nebraska's first two national championships, he played on those teams. And I remember, I believe it was Tom Osborne that said that, maybe it was Osborne, it might have been Jim Walden, actually. So somebody made the comment that, I think it was Tom, without Johnny, the 71 team would not have been as great as it was because of his ability, not only as a receiver, obviously, but as a kick returner, punt returner.
Mike Babcock with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Get the yearbook. It is out on newsstands now. You can subscribe, HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Also 855-3-HUSKER, and a great story, The Magnificent Eight, for Mike Babcock. Not just that story, but also great work in here on the upcoming season. Babbers, you've seen a lot of college football. You've won awards. You've been on and are a part of kind of the national and nationally recognized who's who of college football. Do you agree with Herschel Walker being the top player in the last 50 years with this list? Would you have gone Barry Sanders? Who would you have put number one?
You know, that's a good question, and I looked at the list of voters there. That's a pretty august group. I mean, mm-hmm. I certainly would defer to those people that made that decision. That's almost a coin flip for me between those two guys. And I, you know, because he was a Big Eight guy, I saw Barry Sanders on a little more consistent basis than I did Herschel Walker. So even though, you know, the games weren't televised nearly as frequently, but here's sort of a funny story, and I don't remember the guy's name now, which is bad, but the Kansas head coach every year at the Skywriters Tour, you know, we'd make a stop at every school. And I think one of the standard questions was, you know, who's going to be the outstanding, or who's the guy to watch for, or whatever, in the conference this year. And he, I think Thurman Thomas was still at Oklahoma State too, but the response was Barry Sanders, and he was the only coach that said that. And everybody's like, what?
Who's this guy?
Yeah, no wonder this guy's coaching at Kansas. And, you know, it turns out that he was very perceptive. So this is just a long way of saying, you know, had it been my vote, I probably would have had Sanders first and maybe Walker second. But certainly both those guys, it's a coin flip between those two. When you look at what they accomplished at the college level, and you know, the same for me. Earl Campbell was I was always really impressed with him, and I might have had Bo Jackson third on my list.
Babbers, hang on the line for us. We're up against a tight break. We'll spend a few more minutes. Mike Babcock next, as we'll continue chatting with him on Hail Varsity Radio. Don't forget Rick Pizzo coming up, Mitch Sherman, and we'll dive into a topic of discussion. Which college football coaches should have stuck around a little while longer? Pretty good list. Recruiting weekend, massive. Recruiting analysis on HailVarsity.com, premium content, message boards, and a subscription for you right now. Caller 4, caller 5 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. More with Mike Babcock. We're talking Athlon's top 50 players. And, you know, the running backs can get stuck in my craw a bit. I'm not a huge Archie guy. And I mean, I respect that Archie Griffin won two Heismans, but I mean, I've seen enough footage of Earl, talked with people who covered Earl and know Earl, and then also Bo was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, Archie's getting the number three spot because of two Heismans, period.
Yeah, that's true, and that's no small accomplishment consider that
he's the
Heisman Trophy has been awarded since the late 30s. That's quite an accomplishment, but, having said that, you have to put things in context, I'm not saying that I saw all these guys a lot, but I saw Bo Jackson a couple times, I certainly thought that on my ballot again, he probably would have been ahead of Archie and then probably ahead of Earl Campbell as well. But the one that I didn't see him play enough, even though much more recent, I was a little bit surprised, I guess, that Tim Tebow was the
first quarterback. Yeah,
I got
crazy about that yesterday a little bit. I've calmed down since.
Yeah, he's calmed down a little bit.
lost my mind on that.
Hey, Mike, I got a question for you. So you had Frazier,
sure.
Johnny, Sue, and Remington on this list. Who would have been next in line for you that would have been on the list for the next Husker?
The next Husker for me would have been, I'd have to flip a coin between Grant Wistrom, Mike Rozier and Eric Crouch. Rozier was an extraordinary talent. The thing, he's 2,000-yard rusher, but he wasn't the first one to do it. So he got kind of a bad deal on that from that standpoint. He averaged 7 yards a carry, I think, when he was his senior year, which is incredible. And I think over his career, averaged over 6 yards a carry, something like that. So it would be hard not to have him. I was a big Grant Wistrom guy. I think he was a remarkable player. And Eric Crouch, as good as those teams were from a record standpoint, Eric Crouch had to do a lot of that stuff on his own. Didn't have quite the weapons that maybe some of the other guys did around him, but it would be one of those three guys. I guess I might lean a little bit toward Mike Rozier, but again, it would be tough to pick among those three. But I certainly would have Grant Wistrom in that conversation. I don't know that he comes up that much, but in those things. But he was an outstanding player.
Couple more minutes. Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Babbers, want to end with this and kind of get your thoughts. And one of the stories in the yearbook is about the reset with Nebraska's offense. And you got a huge recruit over the weekend that's going to be a difference maker if things follow through. And you're just stockpiling weapons to throw the football. And before Gill got to Nebraska, Nebraska was a pro-style passing attack. You had Hum, you had Ferragamo. I mean, you had a pro-style attack. Osborne was a brilliant offensive coordinator and passing game coordinator. I mean, he just was incredible at it. Take me through your time with Nebraska. I mean, the overall temperature of Nebraska fans with the style of offense, is it a gotta have the power element, or it's what's embraced because it works so well, and that's what your yield from that was championships? My question is how are folks gonna react to more inconsistent passing? Do you have a feel on that?
Well, that's one of the things that Mike Riley and Dana Langsdorf talked about is, I thought it was interesting. You said, how do you protect the quarterback? How do you protect the offensive line? Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not going to just be, it's not going to be like Daryl LaMonica. This dazed me, but I was a Raiders fan when Daryl LaMonica played quarterback for the Raiders. They called him the Mad Bomber. You know, it seemed like he was always throwing the ball downfield to Warren Wells or somebody. And it's not going to be that kind of an offense. it's going to be a controlled passing offense. So the completion percentage, what they're looking for, should be fairly high. And I think people are fine with it. You know, if Nebraska's successful, that's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And you got to be able to run the ball, because that's part of protecting the quarterback and protecting your system, making it work. So I think people will be comfortable with that. The interesting thing was that Osborne was, he was a wide receivers coach, and then after the back-to-back 6-4 seasons in 67-68, Bob Devaney basically turned the offense over to Tom and said, look, we've got to redesign this thing. It's not working. So Jerry Taggy wasn't a drop-back passer. You know, he was he could run a little bit. And then when they got to Dave Hum and they got to Vince Ferragamo, those guys were pass-oriented guys, and that's kind of the way the offense worked. But I always thought it was interesting. Tom said that he figured out at some point that a rushing yard was worth more than a passing yard because of the things that could go wrong when you're throwing the ball, kind of thing. And so that's how the change to the sort of option quarterback came about. But Turner Gill could have been a drop back back passer. I mean, he had that kind of ability, and he was kind of a went to kind of Jeff Quinn and was the first one, and then you had Turner Gill and Steve Taylor was in that development, and Jerry Godowski was in there. His one really good season, his senior year when he was offensive player of the year in the conference. And it sort of built to Tommy Frazier, you know, and Tommy was kind of the epitome of that, and Scott Frost was pretty good at that, so people look at it and say, well, that's what worked for Nebraska in the past, but that doesn't mean that this is not going to work. And, you know, that's the thing that you're talking about, the receivers like Joshua Moore. Nebraska loads up on weapons like that. I mean, you got to take advantage of it, and it'll incorporate all aspects of it.
Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, we'll talk next week. It was a ton of fun to kind of go around the merry-go-round, and thanks for a few minutes with this, and again, awesome work on the yearbook again.
Hey, thanks, Rudy. Great talking to you guys.
Mike Babcock, an extended edition, the 2 for Tuesday edition of Mike Babcock. Two segments with Babbers. We love him. Good stuff. We'll have more time and more thoughts next hour on Coach Booker's transition at Nebraska from analyst and special teams dude to now the safeties coach. Sauter Heyman, how about Rick and the gang? Your diamond coaches, pure grown diamonds, exclusively at Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, or out west in Grand Island. 10 to 40% less than Earth Mine diamonds. Go see Sauter Heyman today, sauterheyman.com.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Couple quick thoughts here on Scott Booker as we wind down hour one. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, 10 minutes away, and Mitch Sherman from the College World Series. Nebraska does not bring a hire in like Booker as an analyst and special teams analyst without just limiting him in that. I was just going through during the commercial break Booker's resume, and not only did he just crank out tight ends and special teams dudes, either Notre Dame or Kansas State, but just different regions of the country he had to go find kids. So he's been a part of the offensive side of things for Notre Dame when they were averaging 500 yards a game and not turning the ball over four times a quarter, the good old days. And defensively, he was part of that side of the ball as well from a special team standpoint. And he has a background in it from a secondary position. He has coached that side of the ball before. He's coached about everything, it looks like. obviously not quarterbacks or wide receivers, but he's done tight ends. He's done special teams. And he's worked in the secondary at some of his other stops. So, guy's fine. And as an intern for 2 years before he got his full-time shot, they probably threw him everywhere at Notre Dame. So you have, and here's what I think too. And man, I just hope things are okay for Bob Elliott. Great dude, legend of the game, almost 40 years, so close to the McBride family. I mean, just you wish the best. And I don't know anything. I just know what history says when he's had to leave the field. So I look at this for Nebraska as, while you're separating 14 years of coaching experience versus 38 years as a coach and 38 years and a lot of those good years as a coordinator. I mean, K-State's defense was sick when he was a coordinator, and that might have been the Carl told Grandpa to go somewhere. That might have been the 03 season, but that was Elliott's K-State defense. You can't replace or replicate 38 versus 14. Can't do it. But he's still here to learn from and talk to as an analyst, help this defense. But from an energy and on-field standpoint, you're getting a guy that's very, very young. And what have you seen right now? Keith Williams, not super young, but not old, very energetic. Dante Williams, 34 years old, very energetic. Perella, 47, 48 going on. 40, because he's very energetic. It's
Trent,
what it
Bray.
Is. Trent Bray, 33, very energetic. So there are some pros and cons, obviously. Caller 5 right now, a 4-pack VIP tomorrow.
You got it.
All right, for Wednesday at Haymarket Park, a VIP 4-pack for you to the Salt Dogs. Caller 5-466-3776. 466-3776. Caller 5 now. 800-825-5865. Caller 5 now. A VIP 4-pack to the Salt Talks. Rick Pizzo's up next.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Jay Moore on assignment at the College World Series. So if you're out and about, be sure to stop by and see Jay. The Hail Varsity yearbook is out. Mick Stoltenberg is staring back. We welcome in the master of the buffet, tremendous at golf, and he knows all things Big Ten. Rick Pizzo with us at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Mr. Rick, how are you doing, sir?
Chris, life is good, though. I'm wondering how Moore gets all these cushy assignments. At one point, a couple of months ago, he was on his way to the Masters. Now at the greatest site for college baseball in the world. Don't you ever tell him that he's got to stay home and you get to go on site to these spots?
You know, if I could bench as much as him and I didn't need, three chairs to stand on to make eye contact, I'd be all right. Yeah, I'd throw down with him on changing up the assignment a bit, but I'll stay behind the mic and quiver, I guess, is how I put it, man. But, yeah.
Hey, man, I know where you are. Listen, working with all the athletes that I work with and some of those guys as well, I see the suits that Howard Griffin is getting into, and I know that he can do some stuff that I'm never going to do.
Well, but you played, though, too. I mean, you're a hockey dude. No one messes with you.
Howard could mess with me if he wanted. The guy has, like, a 56-inch chest. I mean, he's been retired for over a decade. He looks like he could still go out there and play for the Broncos right now.
No, absolutely. Howard's pretty yoked up. I wanted to start with today's news on Nebraska, and It just came down, Mike Riley announcing a coaching staff change, and That is, assistant Bob Elliott and his 38 years of coaching experience will no longer be available to work on the field during 2017. He'll be a defensive analyst, Scott Booker. He's been hired as the safeties and special teams coach. So he was going to do work with that anyway, but now it's his gig. And the Notre Dame crossover and background and all being part of Diaco, I don't see much issue there. But you're going to lose, you know, 38 years of eyes on college football, at least in-game on field. Rick, what's your reaction to this, the timing of this? And first and foremost, we've expressed this, and I'm sure you do too, the best wishes to Coach Elliott. We don't know the reason, but I know he's had past health problems, so we're not trying to be insensitive on things with this. But overall, do you think this is a hit for Nebraska?
No, I don't think it's a hit. I mean, obviously, on game day, to lose, what, four decades of experience of knowing a place and knowing a program, but still be around and able to offer insight just not on game days. But when it comes down to it, Chris, Diaco was, if I'm not mistaken, around $800,000. He is the highest paid assistant in Nebraska history. Mm-hmm. And so you're not going to hire a guy like that to take over a historic unit like the Blackshirts and then tell him, oh, by the way, you're going to do it my way. You're going to do it the way that we've always done it in the past. Mm-hmm. If you're going to pay someone that much money, and Mike Riley is willing to part with Mark Banker after all the years at Oregon State and after all the time together, starting the program at Nebraska, when you do that kind of thing and you are willing to bring in someone new and risk not just their future, but your future as well. It was Bill Parcells that said, right, they want you to make the dinner, but they don't want you to shop for the groceries. You got to let them shop for the groceries mm-hmm. a little bit, too. And if this makes him more comfortable going down aisle five, finding whatever kind of pasta he wants to find, that's why they're doing it.
Right. Well, that, and you look at just the thing that's needed, too, Rick, is while you're transitioning from 4-3 to 3-4, it's mm-hmm. it's Diaco's 3-4. It is Parcells' 3-4, right? And
yep.
And what you're losing with Elliott on field is a second Diaco, or however you want to deem it, a second Elliott, because Elliott was kind of Diaco's mentor. That's the part here from an installation and a transition standpoint that while Booker's nice and he knows it, it could affect how quick things are spit out and picked up.
It could, and we don't know until fall camp right. rolls around, and really until week one or two, what this does for that transition. I think Mike Riley has been around long enough, and Mike Riley is such a smart guy. You know, he comes off as that kind of aw shucks grandpa guy, and he's so much smarter. I mean, that personality kind of belies just how smart he really yeah. is. And I think he is taking this all in, and he understands how important this year is. He knows what it means for this defense to get back to the glory years of yesteryear. And if, in his mind, this move, as difficult as I'm sure it is for Mike, a guy who truly understands what it means to be a football lifer, if this move is going to make that transition easier for Diaco, is going to make it easier for the players in the defensive backfield, he's going to do it in a heartbeat. And right now, you have to give him the credit. You have to give him the benefit of the doubt that that's the reason that he's doing it.
Hey, Rick, Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com had an interesting article on HailVarsity saying he doesn't think any of the Big Ten football coaches are on the hot seat. Do you agree with that? And do you think there's a chance after this coming season that all 14 coaches could retain their job?
You know, I want to say yes, but I said that again about basketball season last year, and Tom Crean and John Gross both went bye-bye. If you look at the landscape, I don't see many programs that would be desiring to make a change, even if 2017 wasn't what they expected. Now, people will throw back at me, well, really, Michigan State, with everything that's gone on there, and Mark D'Antonio? I think Mark D'Antonio has enough sweat equity and win equity built up that he's going to leave that program when he feels comfortable. The program is not going to say goodbye to him. So you look around the rest of the league, and what other coaches could be on that seat? I mean, I guess you could talk about Lovie Smith because Illinois didn't have what they wanted to have, but really, this quickly, I don't see that either. I think if that move was made, that would be made by Lovie, not by athletic director Josh Whitman. So absolutely, I could see a very realistic scenario where after this year, regardless of how things shake out, that there are no coaching changes inside the league.
Rick Pizzo with us, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio at BTN, Rick Pizzo. Rick, Athlon Sports has their top 50 countdown the last 50 years. Herschel Walker 1, Barry Sanders 2. And if I wanted to ask you, you've seen a lot of college football. Who's the best player you've ever watched with your own two eyes?
Wow. Regardless of position?
Yep.
That's a really, really tough one. You know who was phenomenal? I got to tell you, getting to watch for a long time, Philip Rivers, when he was at NC State, put up silly, silly numbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's obviously why he went as high as he went in the draft. I know Paul Smith, with Eli Manning, no one to go to the Chargers. But what Rivers did, now he had some great talent around him, underrated receivers, Jericho Cotchery, some guys who caught a ton of passes, a running back who unfortunately made the wrong mistakes off the field, and T.A. McClendon, who could have been a star had he made the right mistake, the right moves off the field. But Rivers put up just silly, silly numbers. And that goes back, obviously, to the beginning of my time. In the first year that I covered college football in North Carolina, I got to see Julius Peppers.
Okay.
And Julius Peppers on the defensive line, I'm telling you right now, Chris, was an absolute animal. I mean, he's also the one guy that you walk into a locker room when he takes his shirt off, you have to stop and stare, whether you want to or not, because the guy is an absolute Greek god, and yet he's so shy and quiet and unassuming. So I guess now that I think about it, I would have to say firsthand the most dominant player I ever saw and the best athlete I ever saw, regardless of position, was probably Peppers.
Peppers is phenomenal, and I think he's still going strong, isn't he? Isn't he on a roster somewhere?
He's actually back with the Panthers, where
he
had some great years before he went to the Packers, the Bears, back and forth, and now he's back with Carolina.
Rick Pizzo, a couple more minutes with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. The list is really good, and this Athlon list, and they got Herschel Walker 1, Barry Sanders 2, Archie Griffin 3, and this isn't to pile on Ohio State at all. I just think Earl Campbell or Bo Jackson were better backs. I know Archie's got the hardware. Some of us in the room got a little frustrated with Tebow being in front of Tommy Frazier and Vince Young. What say you on that? Tebow on this top 50, should he be the first quarterback listed?
No. I mean, no way. Was he an amazing leader? Yes. Did
sure.
he do everything that Urban Meyer and that team needed him to do? Absolutely. Did he sour some of his college career because of what he did or did not do in the NFL? Probably, but if you're just ranking college, I understand him being awfully high, but
sure.
No way. I mean, over Tommy Frazier, to me, that's a really, really tough call. I mean, Frazier was a better athlete. He was a better quarterback, you know, overall. Tebow may have been, you know, a better inside-the-tackles runner, but if I was starting a college football team and I had to win one game and those were my two choices, I would choose Tommy Frazier every day and twice on Sunday.
Rick, I wanted to get your thoughts here a little bit on some Big Ten topics, and TJ asked you about the hot seat question. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of feel out how you think two teams right now that have built up a lot of hype, and it's deserved because of the talent level. One, let's talk Penn State. How, and I know we're a month away from media days, but as we talk now, how comfortable do you think Penn State will be with that target on them? Two, Northwestern's getting some love, and they've been really good the last few years, and they've got their backfield back, and the defense has kind of been undersold, but they've been impressive. How do you think both these teams will deal with that target? Northwestern maybe not the favorite, but probably 1A in the West, and then Penn State, can they do it again? How do you think they're going to deal?
Yeah, I think actually dealing with those expectations and the pressure is much easier for Northwestern, and the reason why is because if they don't live up to them, the sky doesn't fall. Mm. Now, Penn State has gotten itself to a spot with the performance last year during the regular season, with the performance despite the loss in the Rose Bowl. They've put themselves in a position where, in my mind, based on everything that we've seen Ohio State lose over the last couple of years and everything that's returning to Penn State, they're the most talented team in the league. I think they're one of the three most talented teams in the country at the skill positions. Trouble is you still have to play Ohio State. Trouble is you still have to play Michigan. Your schedule is really difficult. So then people, if you lose a game, even if it's a game against one of those top-tier teams, will start to wonder, can this team live up to those expectations? And I think they understand in Happy Valley how high those expectations are every year. Now they're ratcheted up another level. So this team has never had to deal with those before, because last year they exceeded, everybody expected them to lose to Wisconsin in the championship game. Nobody expected them to get to the championship game. Everybody said they were going to get blown out by USC in the Rose Bowl. None of those things happened. They overperformed, or they performed better than everyone thought. That's not the case now, because everyone is buying in. So I think they can do it. They have the talent to do it, but it's going to be tougher for them in the East than it is for Northwestern in the West.
Got about 2 minutes left here, Rick. I want to get your thoughts on a Big Ten basketball question. Expanding the conference games from 18 to 20, do you like it? Do you like it, and how likely do you think it gets done?
I absolutely like it. I think it will get done for the same reason that the league was willing to go to 9 games in football. If you want to play good competition, don't you want to play somebody in your league? And right now, there is such a gap. You can go several years of not playing a team, and certainly not playing them twice in 1 year. And that's just wrong to me with those rivalries that have been built up. You look at some of the basketball schedules. I understand that everybody's trying to get to a magic number of wins and get your RPI somewhere and not have too many bad losses. But listen, what would you rather have as a fan, as an athlete, even as a coach? An easy guaranteed win against Mississippi Valley State at home in early December, or one or two more conference games on your schedule every year? I don't think there's any doubt. Athletes, coaches, everybody wants the competition. Yes, I am fully in favor of the expansion of the conference schedule.
Rick Pizzo with us, Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo, Rick, 90 seconds. Food and golf, did it get done on the vacation?
The former, yes. The latter, no. Unfortunately, it's, you know, I, as much as I love the sport, guys, it's as you well know, it's a 5-hour deal minimum, depending on where you're going. And sometimes you just got to say, this is family time, and we'll hit the links when we come back. But the food, my friend, being down on the coast and the peel and eat shrimp, I could do it all day long.
Well, I'm happy for you. Good for you, man. That was awesome. Rick, thanks for taking a few minutes with us. It was great to catch up, bud.
Always my pleasure, gents. Have a great one.
You too. There he is, Rick Pizzo. Big Ten Network, Big Ten Buffet at BTN, Rick Pizzo. And speaking of golf, how about you find your way to WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Tee time, it's been pleasant. It's been gorgeous. It's been fantastic golf weather. Membership benefits, membership pricing. And you can see Chris Thompson or our dear friend Mike Shuhart, Shuey, Director of Instruction. If you need your game worked on, and the summer deals in June are fantastic. What they got going on here in this June special, up till the 30th, $11 a person plus tax, and cart rental not included. But you can go walk 9. I love the Talon course. That's the 9-hole course they got there at Wilderness for $11. I mean, think about it. You have a beer and a koozie, and you're walking. You're stalemating. How many of us can say that while playing sports? It's a good idea. If you want to spend the extra cake for a cart, call me. Because I don't care if we stalemate or not. I need a cart. But, special Talon course, Wilderness Ridge, $11 in tax. No cart, but you'll love it. Mitch Sherman is coming up. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Winding through a Tuesday, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Thanks to Rick Pizzo. Tomorrow, Phil Steele and Brad Edwards, we welcome in with ESPN.com and Magazine. Switching times, moving him an hour back because he's all over the College World Series up in Omaha. Mitch Sherman with us, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how's your day been? How are you, man?
My day is good. I don't know what day it is, but I know I've been watching a lot of baseball, and I'm about to see another game, number eight in 4 days. So I'm doing well, surviving up here.
Well, good. I want to get your reaction, and I assume you've heard or seen on social media the Bob Elliott news, and mm-hmm. Scott Booker is in as your new safeties guy. What's your thought, your immediate reaction?
Just thoughts are with Bob Elliott and hope that everything's okay with him and that he takes care of himself. I don't know the exact situation for him taking this on for personal reasons, but I know that he has a history of some health issues and has had cancer. So I hope that he's doing well and that he is okay to return to the sideline at some point soon.
What's your take on Booker? How much do you know of him? What do you know about him? And you spent a long time doing some good work at Notre Dame, is kind of my read.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about him. He's a guy who has been around, apparently around the Nebraska program for a short period of time, and appears to have a connection with Elliott. So I'm sure they'll work together. I'm sure that Elliott in his role that he has with the team will be a great resource for Scott Booker. So, fortunately for Nebraska, that secondary has some experience. I know he's going to be coaching the safeties. You hope that Nebraska can rely on a guy like Josh Kalu, who has moved to safety from corner and has experience at both spots. And it can be a successful first year for Scott Booker. But as far as him and his coaching style, what he's going to bring to this defensive staff, this news just came out about an hour ago. And being immersed here in baseball, sure. I've honestly not been able to research Scott Booker more than just seeing a little bit about his background at Notre Dame.
Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, let's talk some College World Series, and what'd you think of the Oregon State statement last night?
That it was. Oregon State is here to win. And if there were any questions about that, I think the Beavers answered those questions with their comeback against Cal State Fullerton on Saturday. And then last night was a resounding message that, you may be on a 17-game winning streak. You may be champs of the SEC. You may have all the fans in the stadium and all the history behind you at the College World Series. But this year is Oregon State's year, at least so far, and that did not change in one way last night. In fact, the Beavers only dug in their heels more and said and showed how difficult they are going to be to beat here in Omaha.
Mitch, if Oregon State continues the way they're playing to finish this thing off, win it all, I mean, could they be considered one of the greatest teams ever? I mean, they only have, what, 4 or 5 losses?
Yeah, 56-4. If Oregon State wins 3 more games and ends up 59-4, I don't know how you eliminate them or remove them from a conversation about the greatest teams ever. If you were to stack up this Oregon State team player for player across the diamond and put those pitchers in a line and compare Oregon State to some of the LSU teams of the 90s or some great Miami teams, great Oklahoma State teams or Stanford teams, even I would say some of the teams here in Omaha this year, I don't think they're going to stand out a tremendous amount. It's about how this team plays together. It's about how they feed off each other. And for me, in the 2 games that I've seen, it's about the confidence that Oregon State has. When the Beavers were down 5-1 to Fullerton on Saturday afternoon, it didn't appear by watching the tempo of the game, the attitude that the body language that the players had on both sides, that Oregon State was losing that game. It looked like Oregon State was in control, and eventually that got to Cal State Fullerton. That's so unusual to see with a college team, that they play with that kind of mentality even when they're behind on such a big stage. Maybe if you're behind on a Tuesday game against a directional program in your home stadium, but not in your CWS opener. And these aren't players who are experienced in playing in the College World Series. Oregon State was last year in 2013. Now, their coach, Pat Casey, has a couple of national championships, and the way that the players talk about him, I know that his experience makes a difference in how they go out there and play every game, but it's easier said than done to have that, to keep that kind of mentality even when you're behind. And then last night, you know, from the first pitch of the game, the drag bunt by Stephen Kwan, and he came around to score, Oregon State had control. And when it was much in the same way as Saturday, when it was 3-0 Oregon State in the fifth inning of that game, it felt like it was about 9-0, and then an inning later it was 8-0 after KJ Harrison's grand slam. So they owned that game, and in many ways they owned the Cal State Fullerton game despite being behind. So I'm just really impressed with their composure and their confidence.
Who do you like tonight, Louisville or Florida?
I think we're going to see a good game. I'll have to go with Florida because the higher seed has won all seven games in Omaha, which is just an oddity, kind of a statistical quirk. But, you know, it really goes back to the Super Regionals with the favorites dominating in this tournament. The first weekend, we saw Davidson and Sam Houston State and Missouri State go and win regionals at places where they clearly were not the favorite. They were lower seeded. Texas A&M did the same thing at Houston and made it to Omaha. But for the most part, the seeds held up very well. The home teams won for the most part, not Cal State Fullerton, but the home teams won in the Super Regional round. You had a lot of chalk, and then it's been all chalk in Omaha so far. So going by that, Florida is the higher seed tonight against Louisville, but it's the ACC champ against the SEC champ. And I felt like Louisville coming into this tournament, into the entire tournament, the 64-team tournament, was underseeded at number 7. I think Louisville is much better than the 7th best team in the country and probably deserves to be right there with Florida.
Mitch Sherman with us, ESPN.com. Mitch, I want to get a recruiting question in before we say goodbye. But first, your story on Ryan Summers and what he's doing for a fallen officer. You published this on ESPN yesterday.
Yeah, Ryan Summers is a senior captain, reserve outfielder for Louisville, wants to be an FBI agent. His father is a police officer in Massachusetts. And if you saw Louisville play in its opener here on Sunday, you noticed the flag in the back of their dugout. Louisville police officer Nick Rodman was killed in the line of duty in March in Louisville, and his father and brother, who are also police officers in Louisville, spoke to the team after their Super Regional in their last practice at home before they came out to Omaha, and they gave the team that flag. The team gave the family a signed helmet by the coaches, a patriotic red, white, and blue helmet. They have clearly bonded over this situation. The Rodman family, the family of a police officer, has a tailgate at Louisville's home stadium out behind the left field wall. They're prominent fans. Officer Rodman was often at the games. He said it was his dream to come to Omaha with the team. So to have his father and his brother fly into town yesterday, they received a police escort from the airport back to the Louisville hotel on the team bus, which did not have the team on it. It was just sent to the airport to pick those guys up. A special moment for Louisville today and for Ryan Summers, who has been the caretaker of that flag.
That is a tremendous story, and Mitch, thanks for sharing that. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com, at Mitch Sherman, and you got to read that story if you haven't. Mitch, about 2 minutes, a thought on Joshua Moore's commitment and what Nebraska continues to do at the skill spot. I know it's not signing day yet, but Keith Williams and company doing well. Everything's fluid, but right now you feel okay.
Yeah, you know, you continue to see a decommitment here and there with a commitment, but hey, it's a top 100, or I believe ESPN even has him as a top 50 or 55 player in the country. So I guess if you're Nebraska, you just hope that Tom Herman stays away and the Longhorns don't have a breakout season in year one. These kids can sign in December now, so maybe that takes away a little bit of the worry about a decommitment when you get close to the traditional signing day. But I'm sure the pressure will ramp up in November and the early part of December. And this is a guy that Nebraska is going to have to continue to recruit all the way until he signs. So, and that's the case with a lot of the players that Nebraska is going after, and that's a good thing, because when you recruit guys who are who are being coveted by other big programs, you know, whether it's in their home states or across the country, then you're probably going after some of the right guys. So important victory or movement toward a victory in recruiting for Nebraska with Joshua Moore and as you said, Keith Williams and those coaches who get down in Texas are doing a good job. After that was, I would say, in the early months of the Riley era, the first year that they recruited, that was an area that I know they did not have the success off the bat that they wanted, and they seem to have remedied that problem.
60 seconds. Is it easier now or harder now to get kids out of Texas? I know Herman's there, but he's just starting.
Yeah, and the Herman factor is to be determined. You know, we'll see. He hasn't coached a game yet, and it's the same thing at Oklahoma. It's a fluid time in that part of the Big 12 because, of course, Oklahoma recruits so well in the state of Texas, and now Oklahoma has a new coach, so these guys haven't coached yet. We'll see how the landscape changes with Herman and Lincoln Riley, but they're both young, dynamic guys who are going to appeal to recruits and coaches and parents, and if they win, it's going to make Texas even that much more difficult, even though those guys aren't proven on the same level that Bob Stoops and Mack Brown were as football coaches. But, with Texas and Oklahoma and the change there and the continued success that TCU has had, A&M, Houston, it's a competitive area in recruiting, but it's always been a competitive area in recruiting.
Mitch Sherman, read him, ESPN.com. Great story on Louisville, and he'll be covering the CWS tonight at TD. And, Mitch, thanks for squeezing us in tonight. Appreciate your time, and we'll catch up next week, bud.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Take care. There he is, Mitch Sherman, with us. And I think he was just outside the old presser area at TD Ameritrade. So thanks to him. Good rundown on CWS. I'm going to tweet out the Ryan Summers story from Mitch Sherman. It's very touching. And Louisville on a mission tonight. They get Florida. We'll spend some time and talk a little NBA fireworks next.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Winding down a Tuesday, it's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Thanks to Rick Pizzo and Mitch Sherman from the College World Series. Mike Babcock, a two for Tuesday of Babbers. Phil Steele tomorrow. Who else? Oh, yeah, Brad Edwards, Mike Shewhart, loaded up. Before we get into NBA, sorry, TJ, I saw how excited you got. It's like someone brought in an ice cream cake to you with candles on it. Said, we'll talk NBA next. I have lied to you.
Oh, jeez.
Found something I'm more excited about. we'll let you get your NBA fix here in about 5 minutes, but don't start shaking or jonesing. Paul Meyerberg, tremendous college football writer, USA Today. He's been interviewing and spending time with Craig Bohl. Commander Bohl. And Craig's done an incredible job, obviously, at North Dakota State and at Wyoming. You got the whole Josh Allen, will he or won't he be the number one pick at quarterback? You have Carson Wentz, what he did at North Dakota State, just from a quarterback, but a style and culture in Wyoming. And we'll get Bohl on this show this summer, I promise. Been working on it for 3 years, okay? I will make it happen.
It's a lot of time.
Yeah, but let's be straight. The guy was told to get the hell out of here. And if you don't want to, I don't blame him, is my point.
Okay.
So we'll make that happen, but Craig Bohl asked by Paul Meyerberg about his program's formula in recruiting/development while in Laramie last week. This is part of the answer, and I'm sure Meyerberg's going to have a long-form story on the quarterback and the coach. And with Wyoming playing Nebraska last year, and the kid's name is Josh Allen, right? That's the coordinator. Okay. But he's the kid who threw five picks and kind of unraveled, but looked good and made a couple of nice throws, specifically the throw before halftime that made things a bit closer. California dude that somehow, some way found his way out to Wyoming. Here is Craig Bull on culture and program and recruiting and all of that. And this kind of makes me smile a bit. As much as we have to hammer and hit recruiting, and I know it's lifeblood and I know it's important. Here's Craig Bull. That it, they will do what we ask them to do. Now, we've got to be smart with what we ask them to do, but that it in football can go a hell of a lot further than what people think. And that's a story. That right there is a story. The guy that's running out there on the West Coast, that's a five-star guy that's been shopping around and thinks it's all warm and fuzzy, when the rubber meets the road, they're going to spit the bit out. We're going to have our hands, we're going to have our hand in the dirt and knock the blank out of you. So, it's not warm and fuzzy.
No.
Rubber will meet the road. And while you get hit and you spit out the bit, we're going to knock the out of you. That's what he said. That I can see him like crazily grinning.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like Craig Bull.
With a 6,000-yard stare in his eyes as he's saying it. That's him.
Mm-hmm.
Remember sitting at, I think it was Dino's, right? This is after a football game at Seacrest. And I'm with Garth. It's after a high school game. And Garth was on the team through 02, okay? He's 02, 03, and 04, I believe. So Garth was there for a number of years. And he and Garth, like, never has a bad word to say about anybody because he's genuine, he's sincere, he's just an awesome dude. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting there, and it was one of those 8 o'clock kickoffs, and this might have been like year 3 or 4 of Bull being at North Dakota State. And what's happening? It's a Friday night kickoff, Big 12. It's K-State hosting North Dakota State. And I can probably grab the old Phil Steele in front of me right now and figure out the year. But there was 5 minutes on the clock. K-State's up. And North Dakota State is running a TO special on them. Instead of being up 50, this is to go ahead for the win. And they are running toss power sweeps. They're running ISOs. They are smashing. They're going on. They did a, it pulled an Iowa before the Iowa game. They ran over and demolished Kansas State, a pretty, I think, an 8 or 9 win Kansas State team that year. In Manhattan on a Friday night, hello Craig Bull, smash mouth, bloody nose football, 21-17 win at Kansas State. This might have been the year after they had 11 wins and were a Baylor loss away from playing for a championship, okay? And Garth kind of looked at me, he's like, you know, some guys are just better head coaches than coordinators. And I look at Garth and go, you think? He's working on, I don't know, a 15th straight national title, it felt like, up there. Game day goes to Fargo. And you're beating Bill Snyder in his crib on the season opener. And now USA Today is all over you. We'll see.
Yeah.
Because he got a decent bump. I don't think he's 60 yet. Because didn't you think once Kill left Minnesota, here I come, Craig Bull?
Seemed like a good replacement for sure.
Right, a fit?
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, the guy that got blamed for 62-36 and 7-7 the following year is now...
He's 58. He'll be 59 this summer.
Okay. Yeah, but how about USA Today doing a profile on Wyoming and Coach Bull and their quarterback? We will get Craig Bull this year, I promise. I'm changing it from this summer to this year. Did you want to talk some NBA? Did I give you enough time to talk some NBA?
Well, we might have to push it to the next segment.
That would break my heart. But what the hell is New York doing? What are the Lakers doing? Give people an update on the Lakers.
Yeah, so the Lakers just traded Timothy Mozgov and D'Angelo Russell to the Brooklyn Nets for Brook Lopez and the 27th pick in Thursday's draft. Two things that means. One, they just created a lot of cap space because they were able to get rid of that awful Timothy Mozgov contract that they signed a couple summers ago. So they have cap space to lure LeBron and how Wojnowski's maybe even saying George and LeBron to L.A. Plus, that means getting rid of D'Angelo.
As in by tip-off on Halloween this year?
For 2018-19.
Okay.
That also means getting rid of D'Angelo Russell. Lakers are taking Lonzo Ball for sure at number two.
Okay.
Which I think all signs are pointing to that. So
you've got an athlete in Brook.
Yeah, not bad for a big man.
He doesn't have any stretch range, but he's mobile, very mobile, and he's tough around the rim. But he's not a statue. They'll get Lonzo, and then they can go get Paul and LeBron and dethrone Golden State.
Yeah, that LeBron news was shocking just because why does LeBron want to leave the Eastern Conference? The Rockets, the Warriors, the Spurs, all those teams are better than any second team in the East.
You're going to have to reseed your playoffs is what's going to have to happen.
Just 1 through 16 instead of just East and West?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be in favor of that.
Boston's good, and maybe, but they can't touch anyone out West.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Busy one today. Big thanks to Mitch Sherman from the College World Series. We spent a lot of time talking Bob Elliott and Scott Booker. Nebraska making a move on their coaching staff as Bob Elliott stepping away from an on-field position to an analyst role. And you have Scott Booker. Now the special teams and safeties man for Nebraska. Shared some thoughts on Coach Booker, his background, a little more info on him, and tip of the cap to Bob Elliott for all he's done, and best wishes to him. Rick Pizzo joined us, and also a double shot of Mike Babcock. Caught up with Babbers, and we're going to do more of that this summer with Babbers, thanks to him. A few more thoughts and notes here from TJ Henning on NBA movement, shuffling, shakeup as the trade deadline is a year away because it's draft time here this week.
So some other news from today. Paul Gasol opted out of his contract, so that'll create more space if the Spurs maybe want to get Chris Paul. D-Wade player options going back to the Bulls for $24 million, which I think is smart for him, but maybe no Jimmy Butler or Rondo next year, so that team could look completely different. Then you had the Knicks today, Phil Jackson saying, yeah, we're open to trading Kristaps Porzingis, and just the NBA Twitter lost its mind, and I'm still losing my mind. Most reports are true about that. Some reports are saying, they wouldn't be that dumb, but I wonder if that's just the own Knicks report saying, no, you know, we are that dumb, let's do this. Maybe Phil wants to get it out of there, I don't know, but Kristaps is better than anybody in this draft right now, so if you would want to get rid of him, that's just crazy talk to me. Then you have the Pacers, Lakers trying to work something out for Paul George. You know, the Lakers, okay, do you want to give up assets that you have right now, even though Paul George is likely to come to you next summer?
Paul George wears me out. He's a good player. He's smooth. He's talented. He needs an alpha to follow.
There's a lot of talk with PG. You could go either way. I really like PG-13.
Here's the other thing, man. You know how much freaking Gatorade I've had to buy the last week and a half because of his stupid commercial?
Junior, he loves... I mean, it's a great commercial.
It's fine, but just shut up.
Also, I heard Gatorade... I saw on Twitter, Gatorade's not good for you, I heard, which is kind of crazy to hear. I got to do some more diving on that. That's just what I saw on Twitter today. So, Cavs...
I blame Paul George for... No, that's not the right kind.
Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavs, and David Griffin, the GM.
He pretty much hates people, doesn't he?
Yeah, Dan Gilbert, not an easy guy to get along with, has never extended the contract of a GM for more than the set amount of time they had on the first contract, so he did not renew David Griffin's contract to be GM going forward. LeBron really loved David Griffin. He tweeted about it last night saying, you know, if nobody appreciated you, at least I did, Griff. So, I mean, Griff did everything he could under LeBron to get every move he made. They won a championship under him. Just a really strange move from Dan Gilbert. I don't know if that will get LeBron even out of here faster this year in a trade, or if he'll stay at least one more year. We'll see. They're looking at Chauncey Billups to fill the GM. Chauncey has a very good relationship with Tyronn Lue, Dan Gilbert a little bit, and LeBron James. Tyronn Lue and Chauncey Billups are best of friends, actually. So we'll see how that one plays out. But, man, it is just heating up. We are 2 days away from the NBA draft, and I cannot absolutely wait. It is heating up. NBA offseason, it's the best.
Yes, that means it's still a ways away from the playoffs returning.
That's true.
Now, listen, I'll make some room for you on Thursday for the draft.
Oh, shit.
I think Searles may be in with us on Thursday.
Oh.
If he says no to it, though, I got to go with the big guy. TJ, thanks again, bud.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Phil Steele, Brad Edwards, Mike Shuhart. Find us at 4 tomorrow on Hail Varsity. Take care.